Case number 12-1481 et al. Menasink Residence for Environmental Preservation and Safety et al. Petitioners versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Ms. Elefant for the petitioners, Ms. Larson for the respondent, Mr. Street for the intervener.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Carolyn Elefant for the Menasink Residence. Your Honors, today we seek review of a divided commission decision approving a massive compressor station in a residential neighborhood. At issue before this court is whether the commission erred in approving the Menasink compressor station on the project sponsor's requested terms, notwithstanding enduring impacts to the community, nonconformity with commission siting regulations, and most of all, the availability of an environmentally, economically, and operationally superior alternative which met the project goals and would have obviated the need for this misguided proposal. I'll address 4 points, but before I begin, Your Honors, I realized in preparing for the argument that I failed to pinpoint cite to the joint appendix in my briefs, and I apologize very much for the inconvenience. The 4 points that I'm going to address are as follows. First, the Commission should have taken into account future development and project alternatives in its analysis under Section 7 of the Natural Gas Act and the Certificate Policy Statement. Second, the proposed policy violates the Commission siting regulations. Third, this Court should not defer to the Commission's decision in this case because of various statements it has made suggesting predisposition towards the applicant's proposal. And fourth, I will speak to the recent Rule 28J filing by the Commission and also in that context address some of the due process concerns related to that. Well, let me begin with the first point about Section 7. Section 7 of the Natural Gas Act provides that the Commission shall issue a certificate to a company upon a finding of public convenience and necessity.
And if there were no Wagner alternative, would the Commission's decision be acceptable from your vantage point?
Without the Wagner alternative, we would still contend that the Commission's findings that the proposed project has no environmental impacts is unsupported by substantial evidence. So we would not agree with the Commission's decision even without the Wagner alternative. However, I think it should be somewhat clear that the Wagner alternative certainly changes the dynamics of the case and makes it much stronger. Litigants are always on slightly weaker footing when you're relying on substantial evidence.
And isn't the key then that the Commission concluded that this choice would not require replacement of the Eversink segment?
Yes, that was the Commission's conclusion. That was one of its conclusions with relation to the Menasink compressor station.
Mm-hmm.
The Commission also did address some of the adverse impacts related to Eversink, but yes, it did assume that the Eversink pipeline was not going to be replaced as part of Menasink. And notwithstanding the fact that there's several pieces of evidence in the record suggesting, in fact, that it would be. First, there was a Curry report. It was a presentation put together by the project sponsors. That's in the joint appendix at page 509. Second, there was a statement by Joseph Shields at a town meeting saying that there would be a need for another pipe. Third, there was the expert report submitted by Mr. Cooperwitz, that's in the joint appendix at 784, where he stated that having the constraint of the Eversink pipe on this line was going to cause increase the velocity and cause such great safety concerns that it would need to be replaced.
Suppose, and I know you don't agree with this for the reasons
Sure.
you just said, but suppose that we concluded that we couldn't second-guess the Commission's decision on the Eversink segment. In other words, that would have to be replaced with the Wagner alternative and does not have to be replaced with this choice. What then?
Okay.
Isn't that conclusion, if we can't second-guess it, enough to sustain the Commission's decision here?
No, Your Honors. I would still argue that in this particular situation, perhaps the Commission's decision should be second-guessed because the Commission stated very gratuitously in its order that it has a that it assumes that applications submitted by project sponsors are going to be created in a way that are designed to obtain commission approval because the sponsors invest substantial sums in putting these applications together. And that's a statement that I do not believe was in Texas Eastern. In the Texas Eastern case, the commission there was a challenge to the commission's approval rate of these projects. And the petitioners in that case argued that the fact that so many projects are approved suggests that there's bias. And so the commission came back and said, well, that's not really the case because, the commission is prudent. Project sponsors tend to try to comply with the regulations. That in itself is a questionable rationale. But the other statement that the commission made, that project sponsors invest substantial sums in these projects, and when they submit them, we expect they're going to be qualified for approval, or we assume that these proposals are going to be meritorious. Our system weeds out questionable proposals and leaves us only meritorious ones to consider. That really suggests a predisposition towards the projects, towards the sponsor's project.
First, two questions with respect to that. If we were to agree that there was some predisposition problem here, what would be the remedy? Would it just be a remand to do it all again without that statement? Or are you asking that we sort of forbid acceptance of the project in this case?
Well, I think, Your Honor, it would, first of all, depend on whether we're still working within Judge Kavanaugh's parameters and assuming that the Never Sink proposal for one reason or another is off the table and just looking at the commission's approval. So within those parameters, I think what the commission would do is it would look at the commission's decision with a critical eye. It would look to see whether the findings that the commission made in that case were appropriately supported
and
by evidence.
And so even notwithstanding the existence of that statement to which you object, if everything else in the commission decision were to support its decision or provide a sufficient ground under our narrow standard of review for sustaining the decision, then that statement by itself would not require a remand? Is that what you're saying?
Well, of course, certainly if this court wished to use the suggestion of bias to overturn the case or perhaps remand the case, we would not oppose that. But the context that we have made that point was in the context of the standard of review, where this is not a straight-up argument of bias. We've raised that particular issue to draw the court's attention to the commission's order and to encourage the court to take a more critical eye towards the findings that the commission made, and also look more closely at the evidence that was submitted in this case by the petitioners. Perhaps consider whether there were disputed facts that would have been resolved more fairly at a hearing instead of being resolved by the commission because it was predisposed. So that's,
And with respect to evaluating the Wagner alternative, you've made your points very clear in your briefs about that. One of the difficulties, though, in figuring out what to do with it is not only is it not a proposal that's before the commission, but prior efforts to expand pipes that Never Sink have run into difficulties because of distinct environmental issues there, issues with the Never Sink River, is that what it is?
Yes.
Trying to to deal with that. And I guess protected species that are there. So how would one even begin to evaluate the Wagner alternative, your assertion that it is clearly the better environmental one when in fact it's hit environmental roadblocks itself in the past?
Right. Well, I think there are two responses I would have to that, Your Honor. The first would be to look at sort of the bigger picture issue and to see, when you're balancing the impact on flora and fauna, as the commission said, versus impacts on residents and versus a project in an obtrusive location, whether the commission balanced it properly. But more directly to the point of the Never Sink pipeline, I think if you take a closer look at some of the decisions, the first Never Sink decision in the first case, the commission actually approved the project, including the Never Sink pipeline. That was part of a larger Millennium project. It was like a 400-mile pipeline.
But Millennium was never able to implement it because of these environmental issues. Is that right?
Well, Your Honor, there were environmental issues. It was a very hotly contested project, and the commission, there was Condition 33 and 34, where the commission said that There should either be a direct bore of NeverSync, and if that wasn't possible, Millennium had to look at a fallback. But what happened in the interim is Millennium wasn't able to get a Coastal Zone Management Act permit, and so that has the effect of vetoing a project. There were also some opposition by the city of Vernon, and so I think
and so it sounds like it's kind of out of the frying pan into the fire, right? There's the concerns that you all express so strongly here, but you know, if the Wagoner project were to go forward, there's a whole they've already been voiced, and there's a whole other round and round of environmental concerns on that end.
Right, but that is possible. However, what I was saying with the first approval of it, it was a small segment of a larger project, and it was a larger project that really had the problems. So after all of these problems, and the project was in a stalemate, 8 years later, you know, Millennium came back with a changed proposal, and at that time, it appeared that it just threw up its hands and just said, let's just get the show on the road. We're going to reduce this 400-mile pipeline to 250 miles, and at this point, we're just going to get that far.
But how's a commission supposed to weigh or balance the arguments you make against, you know, a not-yet-proposed expansion at NeverSync and all the potential consequences or environmental objections that could be articulated if that were to be the project that was on the table and people won't be voicing it? How is it supposed to anticipate those and really do an accurate balance for projects that aren't really pending before it?
Well, Your Honor, what the commission did initially was very responsible. When my clients proposed the NeverSync alternative, the commission issued another notice. So it was the same type of notice that would have issued in this case. They said, we're considering this other alternative. It's going to go through your property. What do you think about it? 58 landowners were contacted. A few wrote to the commission in support of the proposal. Many had no position on it at all. There may have been one landowner who was objecting to the proposal, but overall, the record suggests, after notice, that there was going to be very little objection. Many of the residents abutting the NeverSync pipeline are very concerned about the safety. There have been various issues with that pipeline before, and it's an aging facility. So that was the first issue. The second issue is I think that agencies routinely consider different alternatives, whether they're before the commission or not, or whether they're before the agency or not. That's the very essence of the public interest review. That's what the holding was in City of Pittsburgh versus FPC, where applicant had proposed to abandon a facility, and it was going to have consequences. It would have increased the cost of future expansion and perhaps foreclosed it. So those future proposals were not on the table. As far as I know, they were not even underway, but the court said that has to be taken into account because all of these issues go into the question of whether there is a need for the project. And so even though
to be clear, are you pressing the argument that the commission should have found that there was no need to do anything?
No. I think what our proposal is that, no, my clients do acknowledge, we have stated from day one that we understand that Millennium has a need. Their goal is to get this gas to Ramapo. So what my clients did was come up with another way to do it. So our position is more along the lines of the best alternative, the one that serves the public necessity and convenience, is not because there is an alternative that would meet the project goals, that the proposal by Millennium is not the one that should be approved. Now, because the commission can only give a thumbs up or a thumbs down or impose conditions, the effect of our position, if the commission had found that NeverSync was preferable and there was no need for the mini-sink proposal, the same as Chairman Wellinghoff and Commissioner LaFleur, the effect of that would have been to reject the mini-sink project, and perhaps the NeverSync one would have been proposed or not. But our position is not that nothing should be done. It's to come up with a way to accommodate everybody's interests, and that way seems to be the NeverSync approach.
Why isn't the argument by the respondents that Midcoast, a case where the court declined to, reverse the agency's decision, even though there was something that was concededly an environmentally superior alternative that was rejected. Why isn't that fatal to your position here.
I have two responses to that. I will run into my rebuttal time.
You can go ahead.
Okay, well, there are two responses to that. First of all, Midcoast, as I interpreted it, was a NEPA case. And so under NEPA, there is an alternatives analysis, but it's a different type of analysis from the one that takes place under the public interest prong of Section 7. So under NEPA, NEPA is a procedural statute. You basically go through the motions of seeing, you know, whether there are adverse impacts or not. And the best case scenario, you know, you get a remand or something like that. So when the commission, what the commission did in Midcoast is it evaluated both of these alternatives, and it was able to, there was no obligation for it to pick the one that was environmentally superior. But the other distinguishing factor in Midcoast that I think is even more important is the reason why the commission went with the one that was environmentally was environmentally inferior, and that was because the commission had a policy of promoting competition. So there's a very compelling policy reason that the commission went with that alternative. Here, the only compelling policy reason that I can see is to defer to the applicant's proposal. And so this case presents a very different set of facts from Midcoast for those two reasons.
Why don't we hear from the commission and give you time on rebuttal? Thank you.
Absolutely.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Karin Larson for the respondent, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. First, I'd like to make clear the Commission, there is no predisposition at the Commission with regard to any application for a natural gas project. What the Commission was explaining was the high approval rate for pipeline proposals simply demonstrates the prudence on the industry's part and consistency on FERC's part that has resulted over the years in a process that weeds out marginal projects and leaves FERC to consider only those that merit serious consideration. That's in the Commission's rehearing order at paragraph 45, JA-75. Here, there's no dispute.
Wait, so does that mean that when they get an application in, they sort of have a presumption that it's a good one and it's going to meet all the rules and requirements and go into it with that?
There's not a presumption.
What does it mean then?
What it means is that the Commission has set up a framework. Part of that is its certificate policy statement, as well as its precedent and policies. So the industry knows the operating framework for what is going. The Commission is going to consider and evaluate in determining if a project's in the public convenience and necessity, and. The Commission has also
I don't think that's different than any other agency or court. I mean, everybody's got precedent and rules and procedures that the people coming before them know about, but that doesn't mean you come into it thinking, aha, everything that comes in, you know, the industry knows about it, and so they must have already met it or must have got a really good showing under it, or they wouldn't be here.
You're exactly right, Judge Millett. The Commission isn't operating any way differently than any other agency or court. It has presented its framework, and the industry knows how to operate under that framework, and they're able to, through the process, the Commission has found, put forth complete applications, a lot that are often pre-vetted through the Commission's what it calls the pre-filing process. Turning to the NeverSync segment.
Does the public have any participation in that pre-filing process?
Yes. The pre-filing process, it's part of, it's publicized on the Commission's docket. It notices goes out to landowners, to other agencies, to other interested parties. Absolutely, there's public participation.
Did that happen in this case?
No, there was not a pre-filing process in this case. Often it's used for larger projects. This is actually a rather small project for natural gas infrastructure.
I mean, I would hope the Commission could understand how comments like that could give people pause or concern, you know, for members of the public who, when they see statements like that, that it's not going to be, that there's going to be a thumb on the scale in the process.
I understand your concern, but I would add that the Commission's process in reviewing an application is very open, very thorough, I think the record in this case reflects that. It's a lengthy record. It has, the commission has received numerous comments, and the commission's orders reflect its careful and thoughtful consideration of all the comments it received throughout this process, prior to the issuance of the environmental analysis, after the issuance of the environmental analysis, and through and going forward throughout the entire process.
One thing Millennium argues is it reads the statutory language and says you can look at either the present or the future impact. And your brief at times seemed to embrace that and other times didn't. And so I'm trying to get your position on that.
The commission, the statute says that the commission is to determine if a project is in the present or future public convenience and necessity. Here, the contracts demonstrated clearly that there's a present need. The commission also here considered the future public interest.
But I'm asking you how you interpret that statutory language. Is it, would you have been able to say, hey, look, the present interest is enough, we don't have to pay any attention to future impacts?
I think, no, I think that would be too stark. There's a conclusion to make. It is a or, and I think.
Well, didn't City of Pittsburgh say that or doesn't mean or in that you have alternatives, that in fact it would be absurd not to consider both the future implications as well as the present?
That's right, and that's why in City of Pittsburgh the case was remanded back to the predecessor of FERC to consider where the commission willfully ignored in that case the future interest that were and record evidence regarding a future need for a pipeline that was being proposed to be abandoned when there was record excluded from the record, but there was evidence that was attempted to have been submitted that would have indicated that there was an immediate need for that pipeline company to expand its system, yet it was proposing to abandon part of its system. The commission did consider the future public interest with respect to the Minnesink project vis-a-vis the Wagner alternative. And it looked at Millennium's future plans to the extent feasible, and it found that approval of Minnesink neither foreclosed nor necessitated any specific future expansion options. And that's what distinguishes this case from City of Pittsburgh. So here, the commission saw that there's no need, they found no need to replace Neversink. And the FERC also found that whether or not Neversink will someday need to be replaced will depend on the as of now unknowable needs of future unknown customers. So the commission did consider whether the future public interest would have dictated that perhaps Minnesink wasn't the right project. And it concluded that no, indeed, there is a present need for Minnesink, and there's nothing in the future interest that would indicate that Minnesink also is still not needed.
If Millennium were to show up before the commission this fall saying, you know what, on second thought, we think we need to have a bigger pipe now at Neversink, how would the commission factor in what happened at Minnesink in determining whether to authorize that? I assume you would be able to consider what this process and the entire picture surrounding that if that application were to come in?
Absolutely. If that application were to come in, as part of the environmental analysis under the cumulative impacts analysis, the environmental impacts of Minnesink compressor station. After Minnesink, Millennium has built a second compressor station called Hancock. The environmental impacts from those projects would be considered in looking at what the larger scopes of impacts would be if the then proposed Neversink replacement would have. If the Millennium were to come to the commission with an application for the Neversink replacement sometime this fall, that wouldn't change the analysis here. It would mean that.
Isn't there a point that common sense tells you that the NeverSync replacement is going to have to happen, and therefore the commission has based this on a false premise?
No. The allegations that the NeverSync has to be replaced are unsupported. If the Millennium were coming to the commission with a project to replace the NeverSync, it would mean that it identified customers that want additional incremental capacity on their system, and that the next manner that they deem that Millennium has designed to be the best, most environmentally least impactful, and perhaps cost-efficient way to further expand their system may be at that time to do the NeverSync replacement. But
I think there was some tension.
Back in 2011, when Millennium proposed the MiniSync proposal, NeverSync replacement was not the most cost-efficient. It was not the least environmentally impactful way for it to expand its system for the contract demand it had at that time. Nor was it the best way for it to expand its system a year later, when it came to the commission with the proposal to build the Hancock compressor to add, on top of the MiniSync 225,000 decatherms of capacity, another approximately 100,000 decatherms of capacity. Millennium System does not appear to be at the stage yet where additional incremental capacity mandates that NeverSync get replaced.
And I guess I'm trying to figure out how you, since you've acknowledged under City of Pittsburgh, you have to factor in future impacts and not just look at present impact. And some future impacts will be more concrete and calculable than others. And in this case, it seemed like there was some tension in the commission's decision, because on the one hand, it seemed to want to focus on immediate contracts that were in hand. On the other hand, there was discussion, I don't think it's disputed, about the growing need for power on the Northeast Corridor, and that this is, you know, the future demand is only going to go up. And so how does the commission determine whether that recognition that there's going to be a need for more power, more particularly in the natural gas area, more capacity, makes these NeverSync prospects concrete enough that they need to factor it in now versus too speculative? I just don't know how you figure out which is clear enough and which is speculative enough when you're talking about
I think the commission has outlined that in its 1999 certificate policy statement. That policy statement grew out of a recognition that, in particular in the Northeast, there was going to be ever-increasing demands for natural gas. And the commission has always required, as this threshold step under the certificate policy statement, it's going to consider avoiding overbuilding is always a concern at the commission, that a pipeline would build too much capacity. It may sit unused, and its existing customers are subsidizing that, and you had the environmental impacts associated with that unused capacity. And so the commission, through a certificate policy statement, has tried to encourage the industry to tailor their projects to meet the specific need that has been identified at that present time, and that's often identified through the customer contracts with the anchor shippers that they have for the next project. Anything beyond having a contract with the subscribed capacity may become too speculative, unless there can be the showing, there's always an opportunity for a showing of additional public benefits that a proposal might have. But the commission looks very closely at customer contracts to help ensure that there isn't an overbuilding of a system.
Can I ask just a technical question?
Yes.
Is the Cooperwitz, I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly, the Cooperwitz report, is that part of the record on review or not? Since the commission declined to reopen, that would suggest to me it's not part of the record, but then the commission went on to address it on the merits. So what exactly is its status within the content of this record?
I would say it's part of the record, and your characterization of it, of what how the commission treated it, is correct, that it was very late filed. It was filed months after petitioner's request for a hearing were due, and the commission looked at the merits and rejected the report and refused to reopen the record in the sense of reconsider its certificate order because it found that the report was flawed and unsupported.
So let it in. It just decided it declined to reopen the entire process.
Right.
Right? That's how
but
you
would
characterize
it. I would say
it's
part of the overall record because the commission did indeed review the merits of that report and draw its conclusions about it.
Thank you.
We'll thank you.
Hear from intervener.
May it please the court, Aaron Street on behalf of the intervener Millennium Pipeline. I'd like to address the two themes of the questioning I think I'm hearing from the court, whether there's a predisposition on behalf of FERC toward project proposals from the industry, and second, whether there was substantial evidence in the record to support FERC's decision that the Minisink project did not require the replacement of the Neversink, and whether, related to that, whether FERC adequately considered the future.
Well, can I ask you a question? Because you said in your brief and you told the commission that you certainly didn't have any plans for Neversink expansion prior to 2014. Do you have an update on your plans?
There's no current plans. There's no current proposal before the commission. Of course, we're always considering what our future market demand will bear. And as the commission said, there are many different ways to address market demand. We don't have that market demand before us right now.
Do you think it's likely or unlikely to materialize this year or next year?
I can't say, Your Honor. I mean, that wasn't before the commission, and I can't make a representation on that. But I think that question has to be viewed against the backdrop of the history of the Neversink proposal. We've discussed that extensively in our brief at pages 11 and 12. As was said earlier, there was an initial very large proposal that did include expanding the Neversink. FERC issued an interim order that would have approved that, but only if we could go and get all the necessary environmental permits, which we were not able to get. And so we came back with a proposal to keep the smaller Neversink segment in place. And contrary to what Ms. Elefant said, that order did not in some ways approve expanding the Neversink at some future time. In fact, the order was expressly conditioned on the fact that we were not expanding the Neversink at that time. And the upshot of that message is do not expand the Neversink due to the environmental concerns, due to the huge eminent domain takings that would be required, unless there is no other way to meet project demands. And we have found another way to do that, which has no significant environmental impact in this case. The commission expressly found at paragraph 25 of the rehearing order, quote, there are numerous possibilities for expanding service on the Millennium system that would not require replacement or looping of the Neversink segment. So that's the commission's factual finding. So they considered the future. They did a data request to Millennium expressly about Millennium's intent with respect to the Neversink segment, and that's their factual finding.
Isn't this bottleneck something you're going to have to deal with eventually?
Your Honors, I think at some point, if the demand is there, we'll have to consider whether there's any other way to address it or whether we'll have to go forward with the Neversink expansion. But it's perfectly reasonable for the commission, looking at the overall history of this pipeline.
Are you aware of other ways to address that bottleneck?
There's been additional, as the commission stated, there's been additional compression added since this order was issued in our case.
Right, additional compression doesn't help with the bottleneck. I'm talking about there seems to be a recognition that there's a bottleneck due to the pipe diameter at Neversink, and that if demand increases eventually at some point, and we're told that the expectation is that demand on the Northeast Corridor is going to go up, 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 and so it's going to have to be dealt with at some point.
Yes, Your Honor, I believe eventually at some point, if the market demand increases to the point necessary to justify that expansion, that we'll have to go forward with it. I'm not sure when that will be. The commission correctly said that's an as of yet unknowable question.
You'd have to go forward with it being the Neversink expansion,
correct,
or do you have other options?
Well, we're considering all kinds of other options. I mean, at some point, you're absolutely correct that the demand will become sufficient that you will have to have a never-sink expansion. I think that's clear. I think everybody agrees on that. The question is whether you can proceed.
Well, if everyone agrees on it, then shouldn't the commission have made its decision on the assumption that Neversink's going to have to be expanded at some point? I didn't read the decision as assuming it will have to be expanded and everyone agrees on it, as you just said.
The premise of my statement was that there would be sufficient demand in the future. We don't. Nobody can predict natural gas demand. Nobody could have predicted fracking or any other developments in the energy industry. So I don't think it's correct to say the commission must assume at some point in the future it will be replaced. That's dependent on demand. That's dependent on whether it's Millennium getting the demand as opposed to one of its competitors. So the commission doesn't need to go forward with something that raises environmental questions and eminent domain questions until it becomes absolutely necessary to do so. And I would point out, on the question of whether the commission adequately considered Neversink expansion and on whether Neversink would need to be expanded in the future, the dissents did not take issue with that point, Your Honor. The dissents said that might help with future flexibility of the system, but they didn't say that this project will require Neversink to be expanded. They didn't say Neversink will need to be expanded at some point in the future. So this is
well, they weren't that particularized, but they seemed to say that there really should have been a more careful focus on long-term impacts and the long-term decision-making by the commission, which necessarily meant Neversink and dealing with that logjam.
I'm not sure I agree with your reading of the order, Your Honor, respectfully. I think the long-term impacts they were talking about was the things that were identified were taking out of trees and taking out of farmland. That was the long-term impacts that were identified. But in any event, this is the quintessential factual question that's dedicated to the commission's discretion, looking at the overall history of the pipeline. The commission went above and beyond here in this case. There's no evidence of predisposition here, regardless of what one statement taken out of context looks like. And go to your point, Judge Millett. You've correctly characterized this. If this project was denied, it was out of the frying pan and into the fire, because there would have been much stronger environmental arguments against Neversink than there ever were against Minnesink. And the practical result would have been the customers in New York City would not have gotten their natural gas for many years, because Neversink is going to take multiple years to do, and it requires a much greater demand than we had at that time.
Thank you. I think your time is up.
Thank you.
Ms. Oliphant, we'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, as to the point about eminent domain on the Neversink line, I don't believe that the issue of eminent domain was discussed in the in those two Millennium orders when there was discussion of the expansion. There was some discussion about the environmental impacts, but not about eminent domain. That's something that's just materialized out of nowhere based on nothing that is in the record. In fact, there's evidence in the record that contradicts the need for eminent domain because the right-of-way has already been cleared. As to the commission's issue about the openness of the process, the commission's attorney counsel did admit that there was no pre-filing here, but also my clients were really stymied in their ability to get information because of how the commission's process works. There's two types of information, CEII, critical energy infrastructure, and also FOIA information. And I know that the commission just filed a 28-J motion saying that we had lost our FOIA request, which came as no surprise to me because I know that you can't get proprietary information through FOIA. FOIA is not designed for that. That's information we should have been able to obtain somehow through the commission process. If it had been through a hearing, we would have been able to get it that way.
Well, did somebody in the MREPS group or the council at least get access to the hydraulic studies underlying the Kripowitz report essentially 2 months before?
So eventually,
in June 2012?
Yes, so Mr. Odlin had filed a request in March of 2012, and the information was provided in mid-June.
So they had it long before the rehearing request was due.
Yes, but then
so why couldn't you have gotten an expert report in a timely manner?
Well, the individuals all work as a group, and they wanted to all get access to information, so two additional members of the group filed for information so that they could be able to discuss whether to hire an expert, because you...
So your objection is not that the group and council didn't have access, is that not every single member of the group had access at the same time?
That's part of it, but also, it's the CEII was only part of the information that Mr. Odlin sought. He also sought more detailed, granular hydraulic studies that he had to file a FOIA request for, and that went on and on and on. And so, yes, I suppose in retrospect, the prudent thing to do would have been to act quickly on just the information that we had gotten, but we had these FOIA requests outstanding that we also thought we would get a response to. And finally, just the last quick point I wanted to make in terms of the commission's discretion. While I agree the commission has some discretion, the commission also has to abide by its own regulations. And 385.15 says very clearly that above-ground facilities should not be sited in unobtrusive locations. And I actually looked up the word to see what it meant, just to make sure I knew what it meant. Inconspicuous, putting a compressor station in the middle of a community is not really inconspicuous. There's also commission precedent that Commissioner LaFleur alluded to in terms of favoring temporary impacts over long-term, also favoring placement of facilities in greenfield versus putting them in outside of existing, putting them into right-of-ways. And so when the commission, there's a comment the commission makes about how these adverse impacts are not objectively unreasonable. That's not the standard. The commission doesn't follow a reasonable man standard. The commission follows the standard set by its rules. And if the commission rules say that you have to prioritize placement of a project in a greenfield versus an existing right-of-way, or if you have to put a project in an unobtrusive location, that's really the standard by which the impact should be judged.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Case is submitted.